hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my countrymen, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and talking down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the right beside me. I read about some squirrely guy who claims he just don't believe in fact. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in the falling down the key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a falling down key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. And you running down my country, man, you walking on right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program, here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. And, of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning from the European heartland. Well, occasionally, the Vatican does get it right, and the LGBTQ crowd are already upset about this. The Vatican condemns gender theory as a confused concept. Dateline Vatican City. The Vatican condemned gender theory this Monday as part of a confused concept of freedom. Saying in a new document, the idea of gender being determined by personal feelings rather than biology was an attempt to annihilate nature. Well, that would, I think, already get them in trouble, at least with the British Columbia Human Rights Tribunal, because they seem to believe that you are whatever gender you think you are. I wake up this morning, I feel like a woman. Well, I guess I'm a woman. If I feel like a cat, I'm a cat. Anyway, in this case, basing it on the natural law and common sense, I think the Vatican has it right. The document called Male and Female, He Created Them, and that's a quotation from the Bible, of course, was written by the Congregation for Catholic Education as an instruction to Catholic educators on how to address the topic of gender theory in line with the Church teachings. Well, the current gender theory is just plain wacko. It was released as lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people have been celebrating their so-called Pride Month. Amid a surge in demands for acceptance of the idea that gender is more complex and fluid than the binary categories of male and female and depends on more than visible sex characteristics. So, you may have a penis and no vagina, but you think you're a woman. No. The Vatican makes a statement just in tune here with common sense. quote, the concept of gender is seen as dependent upon the subjective mindset of each person who can choose a gender not corresponding to his or her biological sex, and therefore with the way others might see that, others see that person, the Vatican booklet says. It says gender theories are often founded on nothing more than confused concept of freedom in the realms of feelings and wants, or momentary desires provoked by emotional impulses and the will of the individuals, as opposed to anything based on the truths of existence. I put it a little more simply. I think these gender problems, especially in terms of women thinking they're really men and men thinking they're really women, is a form of mental illness. It says the gender theories are, LGBT rights advocates denounce the 30-page document as harmful and confusing, saying it would encourage hatred and bigotry. Well, but what's bigotry? That you stick to your beliefs? Well, that's not a bad thing. Hatred. Well, not, no, the church is not calling on people to hate these confused transgendered people. You can disagree with somebody. You can say somebody's wrong without hating them. You know, if you say 2 and 2 is 75, and I correct you and say, no, you're wrong. You are not correct. That is not so. I don't hate you. I'm not inviting anybody else to hate you. I'm just saying that you're wrong. But that's, of course, the easy way out, where they start wailing about hatred. Francis D. Bernardo of the New Ways Ministry, which seeks to reconcile LGBT Catholics and the Church, called the booklet a gross misrepresentation of the lives of LGBT people that would encourage violence against them. But it doesn't. If I say you're wrong, I'm not telling anybody to go and rearrange your face. This is a sneaky non-argument that gets thrown up quite a bit. Now, here's my local paper. It's called the Mountain News. It's only because I live on an area in Hamilton, an area that's called the Mountain. Anyway, his name is what? This is a column by columnist Gordon Cameron, who is the managing editor for the for Hamilton Community News, and he talks about the 1955 movie The Dam Busters, and one of the dogs. Obviously, one of the characters in the movie is a dog, and that belongs to Wing Commander Gibson, and it's a black coated dog, and the recent release of the movie retains the words that were in the original, and Gordon Cameron is just so pathetically, politically correct and dainty. If you haven't surmised what the dog was called, you'll have to look it up for yourself. If I were to run his name in print, I would be fired before this edition hit the streets, and justifiably so. Okay, not to be cute about it, the dog's name is Nigger. Anyway, he muses on how times have changed and that would simply not be allowed today. Well, actually, it is allowed in black movies, where blacks regularly call each other nigger. But we're not even allowed to utter it. Now, listen to what the guy said, Gordon Cameron. He says, you have to look it up for yourselves. As if I were to run its name in print, I would be fired before this edition hit the streets, and justifiably so. Well, I don't know if he would be fired for quoting what the name of the dog was in a movie. He's not calling somebody that name. He is reporting what the dog was called. And I've known for much of my life people who have dogs and they call the dog nigger. Now, politically incorrect? Well, yes, of course. But Anyway, what worries me is if what Gordon Cameron is saying is actually true, would he be fired for simply reporting what the name of the dog was in a movie, which a good many people, especially of the older generation, have seen? The Dam Buster, it's a movie glorifying some Allied pilots who perfected flying these huge bombers at very low altitudes to try to blow up some of the German dams in along the Ruhr River and other places. Does sanitizing and rewriting history get any closer to the truth? Now, I might say that in this day and age, it would be certainly in print rude to call a Negro a nigger. I agree with that. But to not report this and to have to be so coy about it, well, say, telling them to go to a website or go to Wikipedia or think very carefully for themselves, this demonstrates just how constipated we've become. Well, there's a new moaning and groaning report out here. Gary Barker told the Women Deliver 2019 conference Wednesday that the largest impediment to women's full participation in the workplace is the role men play in child rearing and household duties. Domestic duty imbalance, limiting equity, data show. Huge shifts needed in men's attitudes toward parenting, according to report. This is from the Monday's Vancouver province. I'm son, rather. Governments worldwide should pass a symbolic policy goal to encourage men to increase the amount of domestic chores they do by 50 minutes a day, 5-0 that is, said the co-author of a report on the state of the world's fathers. The fact that women on average handle 3.3 times the amount of housework and child-rearing duties in the home stands in the way of full equality between men and women in the workplace, said Gary Barker of ProMundo, a non-governmental organization that focuses on the role men play in gender equity. Well, maybe there shouldn't be gender equity, if that means the same. Should men and women do the same amount of housework? Well, according to these castration artists, I guess they should. I think that has to be worked out with each couple in general. And this is not always the case. Women are better at and more knowledgeable about what's loosely called housework, and should do more of it than men do. However, yard work, like mowing the lawn, digging the garden, and things like that, in general, men are more adapted to that. Should both sexes help around the house? Yes. But whether each should do exactly the same amount of work, that's another story. But you see, when you buy into equality, that men and women are equal, then you run into a problem. But men and women are different. Okay, well, how do you deal with that? Well, somehow you have to erase the differences, or say the differences don't exist. Well, they exist, but it's only because, you know, men are bad. Don't want to become like women. It's the largest single impediment to women's full participation in the workplace, said Barker, who presented the report Wednesday to the Women's Deliver 2019 conference on gender equity in Vancouver. But should they? Should there be full participation by women in the workplace? Do women want full participation? Many women, including a number of young women I know, want to stay home. They want to raise a family. They want to be there for their husband. And they don't want full participation in the workplace. It also stymies economic growth And that lies at the heart of gender inequality, keeping women, families, communities, countries, and the world poor, the authors wrote. Now, this is real nonsense. So because men don't do this exact same amount of housework as women, it somehow stymies economic growth.
It does?
The report called for full equality between men and women at work and at home, and said that, quote, huge shifts are still needed in attitudes and behaviors by fathers and caregivers. Yeah, you've got to try to change human nature. Now, I'm not saying that women should always be the cook. In fact, and some people may disagree with me on this, at the high end of things, men are better cooks. However, women usually rule the kitchen. Now, in some families, the men have a particular talent for cooking, and they do much of the cooking. Well, that's an arrangement that each couple has to make for themselves. But to say that men and women must do the same amount of housework is just plain wrong. Of the 59 countries studied, Canada ranked 7th, with a ratio of 1.5 times more housework and child-rearing duties being handled by women. No country has equality, Barker said. The goal should be to have 50% of a country's households adjust the amount of work each spouse does. The man should have to do 50 minutes more a day, and the woman should do 50 minutes less to even out the differences. I see. So they do the same amount of work. Do they do it well? Perhaps not. Each sex has its particular talent, and I, of course, acknowledge it's not always the same. As I've already mentioned, some men are better cooks than women. But in general, women rule the house, are better at household tasks, and more suited to them. And that's the way it ought to be. Rather, well, okay, even though I'm not very good at it, I'll do the vacuuming. And even though I have trouble doing it very well, I will fold the laundry. That's the man speaking. So. Anyway, the report goes on. But it's not a huge gap. That could be achieved by, among other remedies, outlined in the report, governments passing a stated policy goal to encourage the change of a type of social engineering, as a type of social engineering, to achieve a positive goal. In other words, they're going to hector and demand and try to humiliate people in order to make the men put on the aprons and while the women sit around and do less. It's called a nudge, more than a nanny state, Barker said. He said the gap doesn't appear to be closing on its own, with a report finding that data from 23 middle and high-income countries showed the unpaid care gap between men and women has dropped by only 7 minutes a day over the past 15 years. The World Economic Forum said it would take more than 200 years for the gap to close without helping it along. In other words, compulsion. The report also found that a significant portion of both men and women in those 23 countries consider bathing and feeding children and changing their diapers the mother's responsibility. Women are better at personal caregiving. I've changed diapers. It's not as though I haven't and I can't. But in general, the intimate care of children is better done by the mother. And that may mean that, as many women would like to do, that they should be able to stay home, or perhaps only work part-time, if that's economically feasible. Of course, that's not the long-range goal, which is to have most men and women in the workforce. Barker said research shows those beliefs change once men parent equally and are more than helpers. More attempts to square the circle or to impose a vision that actually runs counter to nature. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. Going to take a look here at a what I thought was a very interesting commentary about the excuse me, is the domination of the Israeli lobby and the pernicious effects it has on America and on the American body politic. Going to I had it here, and as some of these things have a way of escaping us. Just bear with me. This is actually a very good commentary by a Washington commentator, and we're going to play this right now. This is Congress condemns anti-Semitism in grandstanding vote, and this is I think a pretty shrewd commentary on some of what's going on.
The moral outrage, the righteous indignation, the virtue signaling, the crackdown, the quickening of anti-Semitism as public enemy number one, and now headline out of the Hill, the House approves motion condemning anti-Semitism. House overwhelmingly approved a motion on Wednesday that adds language condemning anti-Semitism to a bill that would cut off. So they added it to this Saudi bill, and this is just days after Rep. Omar dared to say that AIPAC has any influence and that money buys influence in politics. And everybody went after her, everybody attacked her as an anti-Semite, something that everybody knows that AIPAC has a lot of influence. And the motion on anti-Semitism passed with 424 votes after GOP lawmakers requested a roll call vote. And there's more of that, too. They requested a roll call, even though you can tell from the votes out loud that the yeas won it. Daily Caller has the article here. Kevin McCarthy, who was the GOP leader that started this whole thing by attacking Omar, and that's what started the tweet that she responded, that it was because of all about the Benjamins. And he says, just now, Republicans and Democrats voted together with one voice to condemn anti-Semitism in all forms. So that means any criticism at all whatsoever is what it means. And McCarthy says, quote, in a defining moment for the U.S. House of Representatives and the country as a whole, Republicans and Democrats voted as one today to condemn anti-Semitism around the world, to denounce all attempts to delegitimize Israel's right to exist. So all attempts to delegitimize, does that mean any criticism at all whatsoever? They could say that's trying to delegitimize any little bit of criticism, which look what Rep. Omar did. All she said was that AIPAC has influence and they lost their minds. And to oppose efforts to impose boycotts on Israel. So our First Amendment right, our freedom of speech to buy with our dollars, to choose to not do business, peaceful form of protest, they're not even going to allow that. If they want the boycotts to stop, end the apartheid, end the occupation of Palestine, stop the warmongering, stop all the other things, stop all the influence in the United States. And McCarthy said in a statement again, quote, amid the troubling rise of anti-Semitism, including attacks on synagogues and Jewish cemeteries. Oh, where'd it go? That's weird. Sorry. There in Jewish cemeteries, it is our duty as a nation to stand firmly against intolerance and division. This overwhelmingly positive and cohesive vote shows there is no place for anti-Semitism in any form, anytime, anywhere. If that doesn't sound like a crackdown, what does? No, I mean, anti-Semitism is any criticism at all. Any form, anytime, anywhere. And I have been, I did a mini documentary recently about this called The Truth About Anti-Semitism, 40 minutes long, and I've saw this coming. The crackdown is coming hard. We're not going to be able to criticize anything at all, and any criticism of Israel or Jewish power is going to be censored on the internet and possibly made illegal, as I'm going to show you here in a second. So that's out of the Daily Caller. And there was already a bill that was brought up by Rep. Zeldin out of New York, introduced January 23rd of this year. This was House Res 72, House Resolution number 72, rejecting anti-Israel and anti-Semitic hatred in the United States and around the world. So they didn't have to pass this bill, they just added it on the amendment on the other one. But this one was from Zeldin, and they were trying to push it, and now I guess they don't have to. Or maybe they'll do that one too. So I'm going to play you now the House vote and the statements that were made about this amendment. And this is historical. This is going to be a big Orwellian moment of crackdown of free speech in the United States. Removing our ability to expose and oppose foreign influence and foreign power with so much incredible power over our country. Here it is.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Tennessee seek recognition?
Mr. Speaker, I have a motion to recommit at the desk.
Is the gentleman opposed to the joint resolution?
Mr. Speaker, I am in its current form.
The gentleman qualifies. The clerk will now report the motion.
Mr. Kustoff of Tennessee moves to recommit the joint resolution, House Joint Resolution 37, to the Committee on Foreign Affairs with instructions to report the same fact to the House forthwith with the following amendment. Add at the end of Section 1 the following. 11. It is in the national security interest of the United States to combat anti-Semitism around the world because A, anti-Semitism is a challenge to the basic principles of tolerance, pluralism, and democracy and the shared values that bind Americans together. B, that there has been a significant amount of anti-Semitic and anti-Israel hatred.
So it's anti-American, anti-democratic, they say, to criticize Israel. And it's in our national security interest that nobody ever says anything bad about Israel at all whatsoever. This is dangerous and scary and unprecedented, this crackdown.
Anti-Israel hatred that must be strongly condemned. And C, there's an urgent need to ensure the safety and security of Jewish communities, including synagogues, schools, cemeteries, and other institutions. 12. It is in the foreign policy interest of the United States to continue to emphasize the importance of combating anti-Semitism in our bilateral and multilateral relations, including with the United Nations, European Union institutions, Arab League, and the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe.
The gentleman is correct. The clerk will suspend.
So it's not just an American crackdown on anti-Semitism. It's America leading the way for a worldwide crackdown on anti-Semitism.
House will come
on so-called anti-Semitism.
Come to order. The gentleman from Tennessee may proceed. All right. The clerk will continue to report the amendment.
13, because it is important to the national security interests of the United States to maintain strong bipartisan support for Israel, the only democracy in the Middle East. All attempts to delegitimize and deny Israel's right to exist must be denounced and rejected. 14.
All attempts to delegitimize. That means any criticism at all, right? Any criticism could be interpreted as delegitimizing, right? I bet you anything AIPAC wrote this bill. And isn't it funny that one congresswoman sticks her head up and says AIPAC has influence, and then boom, they punish her, and it sends a chilling effect and makes them all afraid to speak up. This is Orwellian and creepy, and ugh.
It is in the national security interest of the United States to oppose restrictive trade practices or boycotts fostered or imposed by any foreign country against other countries friendly to the United States or against any United States person.
The gentleman is recognized for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is the final amendment to the bill. It would not kill the bill nor send it back to committee. If adopted, the resolution will immediately proceed to final passage as amended. Mr. Speaker, the attack in October last year against the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh was a devastating assault on the Jewish community. by inflicting violence on a neighborhood's congregation Shabbat morning service, the gunman sent a bone-chilling message. Even in 2018, hate-filled individuals will attack Jews simply for being Jewish. The Anti-Defamation League believes that this is the deadliest attack on the Jewish community in the history of the United States of America. This tragedy is merely one part of an upsetting development that has emerged in recent years, a resurgence of anti-Semitism around the globe. The Anti-Defamation League reported a 60% rise in anti-Semitic incidences in the United States from 2016 to 2017. In December, the European Union released a survey of over 16,000 European Jews, which reported that anti-Semitism pervades everyday life, undermining European Jews' feeling of safety and security. Mr. Speaker, we should all be alarmed by this international trend. No one should be forced to live in fear of violence or be deterred from participating in their faith community. The United States must remain a global leader, not only in speaking out against anti-Semitism, but in holding those who enable those vile beliefs accountable. Our motion to recommit adds language to H.J. Res 37.
They want to hold us accountable. Anybody that says anything bad about Israel is going to be held accountable. You heard that, right?
That affirms that it is in the national security interest of the United States to combat anti-Semitism around the world. It states that we must make combating anti-Semitism a priority in all of our diplomatic relationships.
Priority.
And we need to ensure that Jews around the world feel safe in their communities. Mr. Speaker, I remain deeply concerned by the measure the Democrats have called up today on Yemen, but if this resolution is going to move forward, it should do so while making a strong statement that the United States has no tolerance for anti-Semitism.
No tolerance.
I urge all members to stand in solidarity with Jews around the world and support the motion to recommit.
So they're using...
Thank you.
They're using the synagogue shooting as the example to justify all of this. How weird is it that it was the Tree of Life Synagogue and 1983 Trump was given a Tree of Life award from the Jewish National Fund, which is the most Zionist organization imaginable. And then now they're cracking down so that their country, with the ADL, who is another foreign agency that should have to register as a foreign lobby at the minimum, they're giving out all these statistics that this is a huge problem and the crackdown is coming. Our rights to speak up against this are being taken away. And all of the Zionist fake patriot media isn't saying a word about it. They don't care. They love it.
Thank you.
I'm going to show you what it really means with this crackdown.
For what purpose does the gentleman from New York seek recognition?
Yes, I rise in support of this resolution.
All of this just because somebody says that AIPAC has influence. Amazing. They really proved Rep. Omar wrong, didn't they, with this this outrage. Oh, AIPAC doesn't have any power. Just when you mention him, just all of Congress and the media goes crazy.
I ask the gentleman from New York, do you seek time in opposition to the motion?
In opposition? No, I don't.
The gentleman does not seek time in opposition to the motion.
No, he just wants to say how much he agrees.
Seek time in opposition to the motion to recommit.
Mr. Speaker, I seek time in opposition, although I do not oppose.
Without objection, then, the gentleman has the gentleman is recognized for 5 minutes.
Thank you. First of all, I accept this resolution, and I agree with everything that Mr. Kostoff just said. Anti-Semitism is a scourge. It's a scourge on humanity. It's a scourge in this country, and it has to be fought just the way prejudice of any kind has to be fought. I think that this entire House should support this and say once and for all with a united voice, we will not tolerate anti-Semitism in any shape or form. And I
will not tolerate anti-Semitism in any shape or form. That means anything. This isn't me exaggerating anything. There's going to be no criticism at all whatsoever. That's already the case. I was just suspended from Twitter last week for just saying the word Zionist, essentially.
And I yield back the balance of my time.
Without objection, the previous question is ordered. The question is on the motion to recommit. Those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no.
So there was a few no's. You hear that? Some people voted no, but then he goes, oh, I demand a roll call. He wanted to see who voted no, and they were going to go after them, and then everybody voted yes. Oh, they don't have any influence. Yeah, nobody's scared, even though so many people have spoken out. I did a video earlier. It's a must-watch APEC and anti-BDS exposed. You have to watch that video. I'll put the link in the description.
The ayes have it. The ayes
I asked for a recorded vote.
I want to know who voted no. I want to know who voted no. That's what that meant.
A recorded vote has been requested. Those favoring a recorded vote will rise. A sufficient number having risen.
And then they go to the vote and everybody votes yes. So the ADL, they cited them a few times. What do they say about what is anti-Israel, anti-Semitic, and anti-Zionist? What it is semantics. I'm anti-semantics. What they're doing is cracking down way too much. The right to be a journalist, the right to be like an atheist and not believe in their religious rituals and ceremonies and sacrifices and that kind of stuff, and end times prophecies, or to be anti-war. I mean, they're just taking, this is out of control, criminal insanity. ADL says, what is anti-Semitism? Here it is, right here, they have it. Is criticism of Israel always anti-Semitic? They go, no, you can criticize. It's okay to criticize, but you can't say this and this and this and this and this, basically anything. So it says anti-Israel crosses the line to anti-Semitism when all Jews are held responsible for the actions of Israel. I agree, that's not fair at all. I don't do that. That would be considered racist. But this one, denied the right to exist as a Jewish state. They would say that boycotts, wanting to boycott for what they're doing to Palestine, that's not saying that they don't have the right to exist. It's just saying they need to stop what they're doing. Boycotts work and they're effective. The ADL is all for boycotts. The Jews boycotted Germany worldwide. But now the ADL puts out a tweet, I did a video, that boycotts don't work and that's not the right path. So anything bad about Israel is denying the right as a Jewish state in their interpretation. And then you can't use traditional anti-Semitic symbols. So does that mean I can't ever use the Star of David to represent Israel? I mean, it's on their flag, or it represents the religion. So I can't ever use that in like a meme or political art or on a thumbnail for a video. I mean, I should have the right to do that. That's the label, that's the symbol that defines, that describes something. So I have to be able to use it. Images or theories. So no theories. Traditional theories. So anti-Semitic tropes, their favorite word they like to repeat. No theories. And they just say whatever we say is a theory, no matter if it's true or not. Oh, shut up, you anti-Semitic conspiracy theorist. That's a conspiracy theory. Did a documentary on that when I first started my channel. Conspiracy Theory Exposed. I'll do the link in the description of that one too. So here it is, U.S. State Department of State, this is a .gov website, defining anti-Semitism. So this is what they mean when they're saying any shape and form. They say, no stereotypical allegations, no talk about the power of Jews, so we can't talk about their power. So the people in power are telling us, a small minority of people that have incredible over-representation of power are telling us that we can't talk about their power. Oh, that's not dangerous at all. It's like the king saying you can't say anything bad about him, essentially. Myth about a world Jewish conspiracy. So, oh, there's no end times prophecies. There's no Zionist agenda to rebuild a temple and rule the world with their Moshiach. That's just, those are fantasies made up in my head, even though I've documented it overwhelming. You can't say Jews control the media, economy, government, or other societal institutions. Whether it's true or not, it doesn't matter. You can't say it, even though you could prove it overwhelming. It's anti-Semitic to talk about them controlling anything. I made a joke. It's Jews controlling Israel is an anti-Semitic conspiracy because they're not allowed to control anything, so that's a conspiracy too, I guess. And then the next one. So you can't talk about them controlling anything. Here's a little compilation from Donald Trump, Banksta's Paradise featuring Donald Trump, a video I did about who owns Trump.
There is this very influential small group, relatively small group, of Jewish donors who give a disproportionate amount of the money to the Republican Party.
Casino. Oh, did you hear that? This is a Jewish writer from the New York Times sounding pretty anti-Semitic by the House and Donald Trump's and all the Zionist standards. Is this going to be illegal? Will this be a criminal offense in the future? Soon it may be.
There is this very influential small group, relatively small group, of Jewish donors who give a disproportionate amount of the money to the Republican Party.
Casino mogul.
Sounds like a conspiracy theorist to me, an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory. Better lock him up.
Casino mogul, Sheldon Adelson. He's worth an estimated $30 billion. And in fact, in 2012, he already spent $100 million in his attempt to defeat Barack Obama.
A season in politics now known as the Adelson primary. Republican presidential hopefuls eager to attract support and maybe millions from casino mogul Sheldon Adelson.
NBC News is anti-Semitic, so Sheldon Adelson is ready to buy the presidency. I wonder if Omar said that Sheldon Adelson bought Trump, or APEC ran Trump's campaign with Michael Glassner, which is true. Or the Rothschilds, the founders of the State of Israel, bailed him out in the early 90s with Wilbur Ross, and now he's the Commerce Secretary. New Yorker, the kingmaker. What? Money doesn't buy influence in Washington, in Congress. This is a conspiracy from the New Yorker. And here's Sheldon Adelson, Trump's top campaign contributor. He's a good American patriot. Watch this clip.
I am not Israeli. The uniform that I wore in the military, unfortunately, was not an Israeli uniform.
You hear that? The uniform that he wore was not an Israeli uniform. Unfortunately, he is not a patriot of America. He has bought Trump to be an agent of Israel. It's plain as day.
It was an American uniform, although my wife was in the IDF.
And then he goes on to say, like, he donates a bunch of money to a foreign military, America First, and he wants his son to be a sniper in the IDF.
Well, that's an excellent commentary. This is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me here on White Resistance Radio. Going to take my musical break right now, and going to start off with Heather Miles with an old Ray Price song, Crazy Arms.
Thank you.
Heather Miles, and this is Paul Fromm. You're on the Fighting Side of Me. Here's Bill Anderson, whispering Bill Anderson. I wonder if God likes country music. Well, I think I know the answer to that.
We've talked a lot today about our friends at the Grand Ole Opry as we salute the Grand Ole Opry on country's family reunion. I don't think anybody has mentioned the name of Roy Acuff, but I want to do that because some of my greatest memories of being on the Opry were the nights that Mr. Roy would come out on the stage and allow me to share the spotlight with him and do this song right here. I got a lot of wonderful memories. If we have time, I'll share some of you, but first I'd like to do the song, and I hope you'll enjoy it. I hope maybe you remember. One night we were out on tour getting ready to do a show. And at the time, it really wasn't anything all that special. It was what you might call just another one-night stand. When I looked over my guitar, and there stood an old man. His cowboy clothes were frayed and worn, and his boots were far from you. He said, I'd like to sit in with your band. You see, I'm a country singer too. Yeah, well, we just all had a big laugh. When I looked back at the old man, there was a tear in his eye. So I told the band to coo, because I didn't want to see him cry. He reached down and he took my guitar with a determined look on his face. But then as he started to play and sing, a look of sadness took its place. He said, I've sang my songs from Maine to California. Sing the word. when I made it, never saved it. I always thought someday I'd be a star. But now my voice is cracked and no one wants me. My wife gave up on me years ago. It's been so long, my kid don't even know me. And picking singing is the only life I know. And then he said,
I wonder if God likes country music. Will there be a place up there to sing my song? Will he make my fingers nimble like they used to be, so I can play the chord and sing along?
I just stood there. None of us really knew what to say. He took my old guitar and he sat it down ever so gently. And then as he turned to leave, the band stood up and applauded. But I can still hear his words today.
Whispering Bill Anderson. I'll play one more song here on the on my musical interlude tonight. This is a great song, originally with George Jones, George Strait and Alan Jackson, Murder on Music Row.
Nobody saw him running. They never found the fingerprint or the weapon that was used. But someone killed country music, cut out its heart and soul. They got away with murder. The almighty dollar and lust the world I bang slowly killed tradition, and for that someone should hang. They all say not guilty, but the evidence will show that murder was committed down on Music Row. Since they committed murder.
said no one would bother more. Drinking and cheating the song.
Oh, I still buy a drinking song, Jordan.
There ain't no justice in it. And the hard facts are cold. That murder was committed. He wouldn't have a chance on the day's radio since they committed murder.
George Strait and Alan Jackson, Murder on Music Row, the destruction of old-fashioned down-homey country music. Well, this is Paul Frown. You're on the fighting side of me here on White Resistance Radio. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign up tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf, forever.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together. The thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield and never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever.